And I want to say good morning, good afternoon, and good evening for wherever you are calling from today. Today's session is Aligning Communication Preferences and Neurological Design in Coaching Conversations with Andre Vermeulen, who many of you may know, and I'll introduce in just a moment. So as you're joining, as I mentioned earlier, would you please take a moment and put your name and where you are from, where not your name comes in, but where you are from in the Q&A box, and maybe what is your favorite quotation of all time. I see Nigeria is here in Vancouver, BC, Canada, Trinidad, Ontario. And let's see, Jean from Philippines. Hello, Jean. Regina, Canada, Taiwan, Montreal, Texas. We're all over the world. So please, Athens, Greece, and it just goes on and on. And I didn't see any quotes, but please feel free to put one in the chat box if you would like. My name is Norma Hollis, and I'm going to be your host today for the session. And we have Lynn masterfully handling all the logistics for WBEX. You know, at WBEX, our mission is to significantly raise the global standard of coaching. We do this by offering content from world-class experts in leadership and coaching in an affordable and accessible way. If you'd like to discuss the content of this session with like-minded coaches in small groups, the implementation mastery sessions related to today's session will take place 30 minutes after the end of today's session, and Andre will be in that session today, and it will also take place next Tuesday. You can sign up for these by clicking the link in the chat box. If you look in the chat box now, you'll find the link. And by the way, the chat box is only used to give you links. Any questionings or typing you want to do, you're going to put in the Q&A box. Now back to today's session. And in order to make the most of this learning experience, we recommend that you turn off all distractions, prepare to take notes, and be fully focused, because you're going to be quite engaged with Andre. I find we had a great conversation before we started. He's such an engaging and authentic speaker. I know you're going to love his energy and his content. So I want to tell you a little bit about Andre. He is a thought leader and speaker. Is a founding member and CEO of Neuralink, a boutique consultancy specializing in the neuroscience of performance optimization, and has over 27 years experience in this field. Now he's a regular speaker and has spoken on stages around the world for TEDx, WBEX, and ATD, as well as his speaking that frequently sees him voted best of the conference. He has written over 43 articles on brain development and mental health. I know I'm looking forward to hearing his message. I asked him something fun about himself and his face lit up. He told me about his brand new grandchildren born two grandchildren in 3 months from his first two sons who are neurosciences and technology experts. So it's all in the family. Please welcome Andre Vermeulen.
Thank you, Norma, for that introduction. And ladies and gents, thank you so much for investing the most valuable thing that you will ever have, and that is your time. And thank you for investing your time in this session today. So we are going to make it a meaningful session for you. The purpose of our session is to focus on some habitual ways of thinking that influence effective coaching conversations. We are going to look at a construct called neurological design and how that influences your coaching conversation. We are going to give you some considerations and tips as we discuss each and every element. And then there's going to be a few brain agility exercises. So it's going to be a video, and the person will illustrate just a simple brain agility exercise that I want to ask you to do with them. It just helps to keep the mind switched on, to stay focused, and to make sure that the next 90 minutes are really quality learning time for you. So you are all experts in the world of coaching. And if we look at the things that influence the coaching conversation, the first most important thing is that we have to tune in before we have a coaching session with someone. And this means this is the time where we have to think about our thinking, about potential prejudices that may influence how we interact with the coachee, or nowadays we refer to them as clients. And also to try and understand, what should I be doing to establish rapport, a strong social bond with this person, and to try and understand their truth when they communicate with you. But then obviously coaches have to listen. This is extremely important that, you know, if we do not accurately absorb the information, we cannot produce an appropriate response. But we listen with our eyes, with our ears. We have to absorb body language. We have to listen to the figurative language or that that person speaks. And I'm going to talk quite a lot about that today. And listen for the what, the how, the intent, and the feelings. But even when we produce an appropriate response and we start talking in that conversation, we have to think about the words that we use, because that will have a massive impact on how this person understands you and what their response is going to be. So we have to think, we have to confirm that we accurately understand, and then we have to produce an appropriate response. Now, I know you know that, but it's going to be within context of this framework that we are going to discuss some neuroscience-related issues that is going to help us to follow this framework and really have effective coaching conversations. So I want to start with our presentation, looking at how the way that we habitually think influence the coaching conversation. And therefore, it's all going to be about mindsets. A mindset is an attitude also. It's the way that we habitually think. It's what the mind is set on. But it's so important that we always have to understand why first. And the why, if you understand why we should be doing what we suggest you should be doing, you can anchor your learning and really make it meaningful. That's why I want to start with a process that we refer to as neuroplasticity. And neuroplasticity describes how the brain can change, learn, and even recover throughout life after an accident or changes and so forth. Essentially, neuroplasticity can be considered as learning. This is the biology of how the brain learns and thinks. And if we talk about mindsets, we have to understand the neuroplastic process. And it also shows us that we can change, we can rewire ourselves if we understand how neuroplasticity works and we follow those principles. Now, neuroplasticity works on three levels: short-term, medium-term, and long-term. But we are not going to focus in this presentation on the long-term effects. What is going to be important in the short-term, when we interact in that immediate moment, as I'm talking to you, there are constant biochemical responses influencing how you transmit messages in your brain. So that's the short-term impact of neuroplasticity. There are biochemical changes taking place. But the medium-term impact of neuroplasticity is where there are structural changes that takes place. Your brain forms neural pathways, and it forms these mindsets that we are going to be talking to about today. The third step, long-term effect of neuroplasticity, is about regional changes in the brain, functional changes in the brain. But that's not going to be relevant to our coaching conversation. Now, if we look at the short-term impact of neuroplasticity, there are biochemical changes taking place in our brain as we speak the whole time throughout life until we die. But this process is extremely important. There are lots of chemicals that run the brain and facilitate learning and thinking and so forth. Now, I'm not trying to give you a neuroscience lesson today. We don't have the time for that. But what is important about understanding the chemical processes are that there are fundamentally two categories of chemicals that regulate how we think and how we learn. The first category are called inhibiting chemicals, and these chemicals inhibit electrical transmission between your brain cells. In other words, they can slow down or sometimes even prevent communication between cells. Now, why I'm referring to these chemicals is that will not facilitate effective communication. And that's why at the bottom of this page, I refer to this as bad fuel. Now, inhibiting chemicals are chemicals that slows down or blocks electrical impulses between cells. To give you an example, if a person got hurt in a motor car accident, they may they will have pain, but they may not feel the pain for a few minutes or maybe even a half an hour or an hour, depending on how much morphine that they secreted into the system. And the morphine will slow down or block the pain message. The pain is there, you just don't feel it. So that's what inhibiting chemicals do in the medium to long term. Now, what is very important is that if we continuously run on more negative emotions or have more negative mindsets, or when we speak negative language that elicits negative responses from people, or if we stress or if we are fatigued, we release these inhibiting chemicals. And if it's constantly released, it is going to have a negative impact on our health, on our energy, on our thinking, concentration, memory, everything else, but also our communication and the conversations that we have. So if we talk about tuning in for a coaching conversation, tune into on what fuel am I going to conduct this coaching conversation that I'm going to have today. Now, this is not the fuel that you want to run onto. Therefore, the implication is that we have to check ourselves and ensure that we manage our minds, our thoughts, and our emotions towards a place of more constructiveness. Because when we look at the next category of chemicals, these neurotransmitters transmit messages from one brain cell to another. We refer to them as facilitators. Now, for a coach or a people development expert, this means this is the good fuel on which we can drive learning, on which we can drive a very powerful, positive coaching conversation. Because when we maintain positive emotions, remember, we refer to emotions as feelings. What is it that you feel? It makes you feel good or it makes you feel bad, because it's chemicals that we release. So we have to be cognizant of the emotions and the ways of habitual thinking that influence how we do our work as coaches and people developers. So this will influence you. It will influence the people that you work with, your clients. And therefore, if we talk about having effective coaching conversations, it means we have to run on the good fuel, where we produce facilitating chemicals like serotonin and endorphins and oxytocin. Forget about the funny names, but these chemicals will complement your coaching conversation. And this is what happens in the moment. So it's crucial for every artist, and coaches, master coaches, are artists of communication. And this is important, that we construct a situation where we know that the coaching conversation is going to be running on good fuel and not bad fuel. We look at the medium-term implications of neuroplasticity. It means your brain has these brain cells, these neurons, but these neurons have dendrites. Now, just like a tree have roots, your brain cells have these dendrites. They connect with each other and you form a neural pathway. In other words, just as you are sitting here listening to me today, inside the white and gray matters of your brain cells are growing these dendrites. They are connecting with others, and they are forming certain neural pathways. And that is literally the biology of learning. But these pathways have to be connected, And then we have to reinforce these pathways sufficiently until they become permanent. When they become permanent, it means a mindset and later an attitude has been formed. And when that happens, your mindsets and your attitudes will impact the responses that you have. So this is your neuroplasticity process. Now, one of the important things there, remember, is that if we talk about a mindset, it is a fixed mental attitude. An attitude is the way that we habitually think, or a disposition that predetermines a person's responses to and your interpretations of situations. If we want to be really masters and artists in the work that we do, working with other people and interacting with them, it is crucial that we have to check our own mindsets, because those mindsets will have a huge impact on what you hear, how you perceive things, and also how you will respond to that. So mindsets influence our coaching conversations profoundly. But here is a scary statistic. And this is that a mindset, when you form that neural pathway, it becomes a perception. But research tells us that about 72% of perceptions contain inaccurate information for the average person. Oh, 72% of perceptions contain inaccurate information. For instance, we hear things like stress is good for you. Really? Biochemically? Stress is the brain and the body's greatest enemy, and it's the biggest killer in our society. A mindset like alcohol makes you relax. Relaxation is when you had a good night's sleep and you wake up. There's a big difference than having drank alcohol and being under the influence of alcohol and the feeling when you wake up. It's not the same thing. But we cloud so many things, and the world is full of half-truths. But then there are also very toxic mindsets where people have prejudice towards people of another race or another gender or another culture. And when people have these preconceived ideas about another, and sometimes those ideas may be even subjective. We may not even always consciously be aware of them, but those ideas will filter the information that we see and that we hear. Therefore, it's so important for us as people development artists and masters that we really think about which mindsets may negatively impact our coaching conversations and interactions and communication with other people. And that's why those negative conversations or these half-truths, we refer to that as toxicity, because those mindsets elicit a negative biochemical response, which is bad fuel. Any conversation, communication,
looks like Andre has definitely frozen. So I imagine he'll catch up with us shortly.
And therefore, so important that we have to ask ourselves, when I drive communication, my conversations, but my communication in life in general, is that mostly based on good fuel chemicals that really stimulates and facilitates effective communication, or bad fuel? And it starts with us who take the lead in a conversation. But even things like continued stress or fatigue has a very negative impact on the production of those facilitating neurotransmitters you need to effectively communicate. So how does stress and fatigue influence me as a coach, the work that I do and the communication that I have with other people. We've got to ask ourselves, what underlying emotions, perceptions, and motives mostly influence our communication? I just read through a study the other day where this study was done in the workplace, and it suggested that as much as almost 90% of the reasons why people do things are often more negative. So I may be nice to you, but maybe the motivation behind that may be very negative, and it may be just pretense. So we need to go through a metacognitive process. Think about your thinking, but also think brutally honest about the emotions that govern your behavior, your perspective, your perceptions, and what are the motives? Why is it that you do that you do? For instance, we do get that people may display very positive behavior. They work extremely hard, but the energy behind that may be a fear of failure. And a fear of failure will directly be linked to those inhibiting chemicals that's bad fuel in the medium to long term, bad energy and bad health, but often also not effective communication as such. So mindsets that toxify good listening, and we know that listening is the point of departure in effective communication. We've got to become aware of, are we for our mindsets where we assume things or we incorrectly interpret the words of other people, where we are judgy, where we filter only what we choose to want to hear, and then filter out other information, things like a mindset of let me just tell you or advise you. When people subjectively relate to a certain issue in a positive or negative way, I may be speaking to a coachee who's maybe on the other side of a socioeconomic issue than I am, and that subject, my subjective motive or perception may influence how I connect with my client, the coachee, and so forth. Mind reading, and then thinking about what I'm going to say to other people and not really listening. These types of mindsets will have a very negative biochemical impact on people. So what is the solution? We want to detoxify. So what are detoxifying mindsets? And a mindset is when we reinforce those pathways and grow habits that are very positive. And positive habits for us to have great coaching conversations in the first place is when we give the gift of open-hearted listening. And I want to add to this, we've listened first without prejudice, without judgment, without preconceived ideas, and allow another's truth to be. We need to allow another to speak their truth, even if that is not your truth. Then obviously there's a golden rule, and that is the listener controls the conversation. Because if I don't listen, what's the use of communication? If I speak to the wall, it means nothing. If I speak to someone who does not naturally and effectively listen, it will not help me. So I think one of the greatest skills that any people development practitioner and coach can and should have is to be a good listener. Try to understand the truth of another without prejudice and without discrimination, even if their truth differs from your truth. Allow another's truth to be and exist without prejudice, because that is the gift that all of us want, is for people to grant us the right to have our truth without people discriminating against us. But we have to give that same gift that we want for ourselves also to others. So that mindset, that way of living, this is an emotional intelligence foundational principle that is of crucial importance. The conversation, as always, have to go on a win-win mindset, where we try to allow another to be, to express what they want, and to help them. I cannot think as a coach, if we want to help our clients achieve their goals and achieve their results, that it can happen on a win-lose mindset, and that it's a sustainable solution in the medium to long term. The mindset, regardless of sometimes, even if people are really rock star coaches, they are master coaches, it is crucial that when we work with people, that our status and the levels of skills should not influence who we are. The I am okay, you're okay mindset, where we have the freedom to just be two individuals speaking to each other, is going to be crucial. It's all these mindsets, why we refer to them as detoxifying mindsets, ladies and gents, are because they help you to elicit those facilitating neurotransmitters that is going to complement the conversations that you have with people. And then as people developers and coaches, we have to do unto others what they want to be done unto. And what I mean with this is connect with them. If we want to establish rapport, we need to connect with them on their level. We need to speak their language so that they can understand what it is that we want to communicate, but also for us to establish a strong social bond with them. So this was the part of mindsets. And I want you to really think about, what is it that you can do after today's conversation to really go back? And even if you are a master coach, what is it that you can still add to ensure that the mindsets that govern your coaching conversations from your side are as constructive and positive as possible, and because you control the conversation. But before we go on to our next aspect that we want to talk about, here is one of those brain agility exercises that I refer to. So just take some time and just try and do what the instructor is illustrating to you. It's called a brain agility exercise, and it's just there to help us keep the brain switched on. Well, there we go. So ask yourself, what is your brain agility and flexibility? So the next thing that we are going to have a discussion about is the impact of your and your client's neurological design and how that influences the coaching conversation. Now, when we talk about neurological design, it refers to the brain-based elements that determine how uniquely you think, learn, process information, and communicate. In general, there are many different elements that will all in an integrated way influence how you think, how you learn, and how you communicate. But these are the seven main elements. But what is important here is we've got to ask ourselves, Why is it important to speak about neurodesign? It is all about who am I as a communicator, a coach, a people developer, but even as a parent and as a friend. Who am I as a communicator? What is the language that I speak? And how is it that people experience me? What is it that they see and hear? And what are the effects of your communication on others? But then also, so important that we need to have accurate understanding of who we are communicating with. We really want to establish a strong social bond and rapport with the people that we teach, that we coach, and that we interact with. We need to try and understand as much as possible about who they are as communicators. We've got to ask ourselves, do I understand my client's natural default communication preferences? And do I have that mental flexibility to adapt my style to strengthen rapport and establish strong social bonds with others? And obviously, that awareness, that accurate awareness, is all about having understanding of who am I as a person, and who I am as a person influence what I do, how I communicate, how I think, how I learn, and everything else. So it starts by thinking how what we are going to discuss today is applicable to me. Now, in the first place, if I ask myself, how do I communicate? The question is, how does my neurodesign influence how I listen? So as we continue, I want you to think about yourself the whole time. How is what I'm discussing with you today applicable to you as the coach? But then even sometimes ideas will come up about people that you are interacting with at the moment, and this may help to color in the picture of understanding who they are. We've got to ask ourselves, how does my design influence how I express myself? How does my design influence what people hear, what they see, and the effect that I have on them? And then, obviously, there's no use in learning if we do not think about, after a presentation like this, what should I do to improve my coaching conversation with my clients? Now, when we start with neurodesign, it starts with looking at how the hemispheres of the brain influence how we think, learn, and communicate. But then we look at your expressive and receptive areas of the brain. That means the front and the back areas of your brain. But then if we look at your brain from the top like this, and you draw a line between the two hemispheres and the front and the back part, then it illustrates some figurative preferences and languages that we speak when we learn, think, and communicate. But then our rational areas of the brain, the outside layer, as well as the deeper areas of the brain, will also influence the fuel that drives our conversations. Then the way that we process information will have a significant impact on your communication, as well as your sensory learning preferences. So these are the factors that we are gonna refer to that are relevant to your coaching conversation. Now, when we look at your brain, it has two hemispheres. And what we have to understand is your brain speaks two different languages. Therefore, your brain works like a movie. There are the verbal parts and there are the visual parts. But without one of the two, we cannot understand what the movie was all about. So very important also when it comes to communication, there's the verbal part and the nonverbal part. In other words, the language part, the semantics, what am I saying? But then on the other side, the nonverbal part, the body language part, how am I interacting with people and so forth? And it's never a question of the one or the other, but it's always a question, if we talk about having effective coaching conversations, It is always about the one and the other. So think about this for yourself. Are you more verbal or nonverbal? Is your communication more about what or the how? So that will have an impact on what your client will experience. But you need to try and understand, who is my client? And is my client a verbal or a more nonverbal communicator? Do they focus more on the what or the how? Or are they balanced? But that will give you an indication of knowing how to interact with them. Remember, do unto others what they want to be done unto. But that requires of us as coaches to really be very flexible. So therefore, always, when we work with other people, try to anticipate and recognize their preferences. What are their preferences? And when they show that to you, recognize it, see it for what it is. Then also, sometimes people have, I've had criticism where people say to me, I sound angry and so forth. But my truth is, I am very passionate. I am very a language-oriented person. And I communicate the what more than my focus on the how, especially if I'm a bit in a stressed situation. So we've got to try and understand the truth of another and not make incorrect assumptions about the person. But then understand their communication style, verbal, nonverbal, what and or how. Also look at your, but also the client's flexibility. Some people have a very strong focus to be rather language oriented or body language oriented. We want to be master people developers. We need to be both in order to have the flexibility to work with people with different preferences. So you consider their preferences, you consider your preferences. And then important that in our coaching conversations, we need to focus on the detail and the big picture, on the language and the body language. We need to be analytical and creative at the same time. So the point is not the one or the other, but flexibility implies the one and the other. So when we look at the brain from the front to the back, if this is the front here, and that is the back there, the front areas of your brain are your expressive areas. So it doesn't matter if the person has, it's not about the left or the right, it's the front regions of your brain makes you very expressive. So people with a preference more for the language side would be verbally expressive. Other people can be non-verbally expressive. So this is a different dimension. Your expressive people love to tell you what they think, what they feel, whether you want to know that or not, but they will actually, they need to express. They think through expression. They have to express when learning, and they are going to be busy in a coaching conversation. They are outspoken, they are talkative, they focus on language, they are verbal oriented. But your receptive person is more introvert-like because they focus more energy towards the back parts of the brain, which are the areas that absorbs information. It makes you more receptive. And therefore, they are people who tend to be quiet, more observing learners and thinkers. They appear to often be reserved, especially in new situations, if they don't know you that well yet. They stop, they think before they say something or before they act. They often appear to be shy, but they like to function more independently and be more individualistic. So, understanding these frameworks, look at who am I coaching? Who am I training? Who am I teaching? And try to understand that when people are tend to look shy or reserved, or they might just sit and look at you and almost want to force you to take over the conversation in a coaching situation because they do not talk, this may be a highly receptive person. But then also the highly expressive person may be one who hijacks the conversation. So that balance, so know who I'm coaching and think, how will I establish rapport, but also manage the coaching conversation so that nothing gets hijacked, but that there's a good balance in that conversation. So therefore, again, we need to understand ourselves, but we also need to try and understand our clients. And it's never a question of the one or the other. It's always a question for us as people developers to be the one and the other. We need to have that cognitive flexibility to not just function from our default mode preferences, but actually to utilize all areas of the brain, here's the keyword, simultaneously. That will provide us with that cognitive flexibility to really adapt easy and fast to our clients and how they respond. So think about the people that you work with. Think before. These things are of crucial importance in that tune-in session before you have a coaching conversation. We need to be clear on who am I coaching and how that should influence my approach to facilitate a constructive conversation that's running on good fuel. But now when we look at the brain from the top and we draw a line between the hemispheres and the front and the back, so although you can't really do that in terms of brain regions, this is more a figurative illustration of people having the preferences of communicating, thinking, and learning in different ways. Now, when you look at this picture, your analyst person is the person who would be more logical structured. They speak a detailed language. Whenever they communicate with you, they need detail, and they will talk a lot of detail. Your doer is the action-oriented person, the results-oriented communicator. They want to get to a certain outcome. They speak results, results, and results. They may appear even to be sometimes impatient if this conversation is not going fast enough towards a certain outcome. Your counselors, these are just figurative ways of referring to different ways of how people think, learn, and communicate. So the counselor is just a more people-oriented, relationships-oriented type of person. They speak a relationships language. They want that relationship between you and me is very important. How we talk to each other and how we show respect and loyalty and empathy to each other is very important. So they are more diplomatic, more respectful, and so forth. Your strategists are your big picture thinkers, your creative people. They think, they like to think outside of the box and so forth. Now, the point is, ladies and gents, and I, you all know this, we don't just speak one of these languages, we speak all four. But normally, when you listen to people, you will see there's a bit of a sequence. For instance, if I have to solve a problem or in my communication, I am first outcomes oriented, results oriented. What's the outcome? Why are we, what are we trying to achieve here? Second, let's get into the detail in order to think, how are we going to achieve this? Then I would go into the big picture of strategizing, looking at options and how we're going to do it. And after that, I will be looking as a counselor of people and who is going to do what and so forth. So the point is, we speak these various languages, but our point of departure, the sequence in how we speak, these figurative languages are very different. But it's important because it will influence the coaching conversation profoundly. Now, when you have a results-oriented, task-oriented person who drives hard towards the results, speaking to the counselor, the chances for misunderstanding or conflict to arise because they speak figurative different languages are sometimes very big. I see it in the workplace all the time when I work with teams. And therefore, it's so important that one, we have to understand our preferences, our sequence, but therefore also understand that the person with whom I'm communicating is following a different approach. And we got to learn and read that approach, respect that, and also function accordingly. So communication is truly an art. It's not just when it comes to the what we say will be done very often in at least four different ways. So this is just a slide that sort of illustrates the focus areas of the various communication styles for you more and more. But it is so important that we have to be cognizant of these figurative languages. To give you an example, coaching considerations means that we have to consider what are the different figurative languages that I speak, that my client speaks, and then ask myself, what are the chances of us to misunderstand each other? And then for me, the master coach being in charge of this conversation, I need to do unto the client what the client wanna be done unto, which requires mental flexibility from me to speak all four languages and adapt my figurative style in order to be able to meet that person on their level. Gotta ask ourselves, when we work with people, is the client that I work with, is their style more supporting or controlling? Is it direct or indirect? Because that will impact often what language they enjoy and understand, and then also how you should be communicating with them. And again, the golden rule, treat others the way they want to be treated, speak their language. So if we look at coaching considerations for people who are more doers, in other words, your task-oriented, goal-oriented, results-oriented communicators, they often would communicate almost abruptly, short, sweet, I want to get to a result. And for them, they normally want the power in a situation. But then they want you to get to the point, to be straight, to be direct, to be clear and concise, and to talk with forceful conviction. In other words, they will not believe you if you do not believe in yourself first a lot. And then we need to get the conversation going at a fairly fast pace. This is if we work with task-oriented people, results-oriented people, and it influences their communication style, some pointers to keep in mind. But then if we work with your highly analytical and logical communicators, they want accuracy and order. So the conversation has to make sense. It has to be logical. There has to be structure and order. You've got to follow an orderly approach. You've got to pay attention to all the details. And we've got to make sure that we provide them with as much detail as they would require. When you communicate as a coach with a client who's more strategic, they want acknowledgement, applause, recognition. They're often very fun to work with, very dynamic, brings a lot of high energy to the conversation. Normally, I enjoy my conversations with them very much. They make your encounters fun and exciting. And they show energy while focused on the interactions and so on. But still a fairly fast-paced, energetic conversation that we should consider having them. When we speak to people who are very strong relationships oriented, that's the figurative language that they speak, the counselors. Then they want stability and a personal social bond, a strong social bond with you. So they again want to be rather treated with warmth and patience, whereas, for instance, the doer, it can be very direct, sometimes even blunt, but they can take it. But for your counselors, you got to be more diplomatic, warm, empathic, show patience, create casual, personable, one-to-one caring relationships with them. That's what they need in a coaching conversation, and be very supportive of who they are. So there's a lot of things to take into consideration, ladies and gents. And I'm sure with the seasoned coaches, a lot of what we've been talking has been resonating with you, maybe from various perspectives, but it still will make sense because I experience this and interacting with people every single day of my life. And this has opened up a world of knowledge for me and how to connect with others. But it's time for us to take a quick brain agility exercise to give the brain a bit of a break. So again, just be ready, follow the instructor and see how this works. Okay, so I hope that that one really got your brain focused again. So when we look at the next aspect of your amazing neurological design, it is about looking at the brain regions from the top to the bottom. So your top regions are your rational processing areas, and the deeper parts of your brain are your emotional processing areas. So the neocortex, the outside layer of your brain, that's where cognitive processes, intellectual processes, rational processes takes place. And very often, whether people are people-oriented or strategic or doers or analytical, but they reason about things. That's why we refer to them often as they are thinkers. But some people tend to be more feelers, which means they focus more activity in the deeper parts of their brain, where the subconscious mind and the core of our emotional processing reside. And therefore, they will be definitely more irrational. But here, irrational is not a negative word. It just means emotional. So it is important that we have to have understanding that the people we interact with, are they talking a rational or a feeling language? How is it that they want me to interact with them? And they so therefore be cognizant of it. So coaching considerations for the rational versus the emotional, or the thinker versus the feeler. One, be aware of your own preference, be aware of your client's preference. And the key for us as seasoned people developers is not to be the one or the other, but to be the one and the other. To communicate the facts and the experience. To reason, but to acknowledge in the same instance the emotion. So often I hear people saying, don't be emotional, just be reasonable. Reasonable is important, but that does not mean that we have to shut off emotions. Emotions are the energy that drives human behavior. So we cannot tell people to shut off emotions, but we have to learn the fine art of managing both. And if we can do that, it's going to help us have effective conversations with different kinds of people that we teach and that we coach. Now, a very crucial part that influences your conversations is your information processing style and your client's information processing style. Now, what does it mean? Your information processing style consists of the hemispheres, the brain regions, the eyes, the ears, and the hands, your senses, that takes the leading role when you process information. Now remember, your senses are the doors to your brain. So we absorb information through the eyes, the nose, the mouth, the ears, and the skin. But then it goes to your brain. But then certain areas, brain regions, will lead while others will follow. The best way for me to illustrate this, as you are sitting there listening to me and you look at my screen now for a moment, you look specifically at me, I am looking at you, and if I extend my hands and I make a hole with my hands not bigger than a golf ball, while I'm looking at you and I'm focusing, you are only seeing one eye. The point is, I'm looking at you with both eyes. But if I really have to focus, you will only see one eye. In other words, that's the eye that leads. That's my dominant eye. So what we have to remember, my eyes are the only part of my brain that's visible. But how my eyes process information will tell you how the brain works. So if we look at the person's information processing style, we need to consider the impact of the leading brain regions and senses when people think, learn, process information, and when they communicate. So to give you an example, when a person has a leading right eye, it doesn't mean the other eye is not working. Both eyes are working 100%. One takes the lead and one follows. And that's why I'm looking at you with both eyes. But if I have to focus, one leads, one follows. If I'm in a conversation with someone who speaks very softly, I may instinctively go, excuse me, what are you saying? I'm turning my leading ear towards that person. So the leading senses has an impact on how you process information. But now very important that the leading senses are not just all on the same side. So a person can be right eye dominant and left ear dominant. But then that person can have a leading hemisphere. In other words, that's the hemisphere that often takes the lead in a problem-solving situation or even in the information processing situation. And then you have a leading hand. So there are 16 different ways of how people, combinations of how people process information. But how we process information will have a massive impact on how we think, how we learn, and how we communicate. And that is what makes us so different. Now, when you look at this, the left side of my brain controls the right side of the body, and the wiring from a right brain hemisphere goes to the left side of the body. And therefore, what is important to understand when we look at the processing preferences of your senses, you have heard that people talk about someone being either far-sighted or near-sighted. Now, your far-sighted people are people who have a huge focus on the left eye. It leads in their processing process. Your nearsighted person is the person who leads with your right eye. But they do have different preferences in the content of information that they process. So the left hemisphere that controls your right eye will therefore focus more on things closer by, on detail. It prefers to track from left towards right, and it enjoys processing details like words and so forth. Now, remember, do not make a mistake. In my case, I am right eye dominant, but my right eye is my weakest eye. Why is it my weakest eye? It has become weaker because years of studies and being focused on computers and details and textbooks and reading and whatever has placed a massive strain on my right eye. That's why it's become weaker. So the dominant or the leading eye, it doesn't mean it's your strongest eye. It is the one that takes the natural lead to process. So when people are right ear dominant, for instance, so I'm listening to you, I'm turning my right ear towards you. When people do that, the dominant leading preference for the right ear is to pay more attention to what is being said. They listen to verbal content. So your specific dominant senses will take on these preferences. Now, when we look at the other side, my right brain hemisphere controls the senses on the left side of my body. And therefore, if we look at the left eye, my left eye is my more far-sighted, conceptual, big picture eye. It is the one that seeks movement and color and the bigger picture, spatial. It tracks from right towards left, the opposite than what the right eye does. And it focuses on things like colors and shapes and movements. Now remember, very important, if you drive and you close one eye, you lose your three-dimensional vision. And I would not recommend you do that while being in traffic. But it just shows you, if we really want three-dimensional vision, you need both eyes. But even if you need both, one leads and one follows. So because the various eyes give you various processing preferences, and together that gives you conceptual visual processing. Your left ear tends to listen more to how you say things, to the body language. You are talking too fast, too hard. I don't like your facial expressions. You sound abrupt, and so forth. They listen to body language. So when people are left ear is their leading ear, then, or the dominant one that some would refer to, that will have an impact on their personality, how they learn, how they listen, and how they respond and communicate. So I want to give you an example. When you look at the next slide, what you will see is a very interesting processing style of a person who has a right hemisphere, leading right hemisphere, a leading right hand, a leading left eye, and then this person has a right brain hemisphere functional preference. Now, what this means is when the senses on the opposite side of the leading hemisphere, even during stress, that is a strength. But these biochemical responses that I referred to earlier today in the presentation, when people stress, they produce chemicals that block electrical transmission. Now, the stress chemical is called cortisol. Medium to long term, it acts as an inhibitor. It slows down or blocks electrical transmission. So when people have a leading hemisphere, that's their default preference. Then the non-dominant or the non-leading hemisphere becomes impacted by stress and fatigue more. So that information, in this case, the left hemisphere controls the right hand and right ear. But during stress, when information comes in, it will slow down or block electrical transmission, resulting in a neurological hindrance. And a neurological hindrance means it slows down, or depending on the volume of those chemicals, blocks electrical transmission. Now, this is one of 16 information processing styles. But it means this person is a visual learner, but because the communication and the writing hand is right hand, the person is nonverbal. The right hand sends information to the verbal hemisphere, which, if during stress and fatigue, is then inhibited. The bottom line is, in layman's terms, the non-dominant side of the brain switches off. And now I cannot express the thoughts I have, put it through the verbal centers to put my thoughts on paper. In other words, it's going to cause an expressive or a kinesthetic hindrance for the person. But even during stress, the person has access through the dominant left eye to the dominant leading right hemisphere, brain hemisphere, which means they're still visual learners. So the point that I want to make here simply, ladies and gents, when the dominant senses are opposite on the same side and opposite the dominant hemisphere, even during stress, it will not cause an hindrance. In other words, when we look at this picture, even if a person has stress, but the person has a strong verbal communication and lateral preference, the person is right eye, right ear, and right-handed. Even under stressful situations where the non-dominant regions or the non-leading regions are inhibited, the bottom line, this person will still have access through the dominant senses to the dominant hemisphere, and therefore be visual learners, auditory learners, and we call it verbal. They can express themselves. They can put their thoughts on paper. So in a stressful situation, this person can actually still very easy express themselves. But if we look at this picture here, because this person has two senses on the same side of the body, in a stressful situation, their potential difficulty for communication will move up from none, two steps up to moderate. It just means if you are a coach who's communicating with a coachee, a client who has this profile, and that person is not fully rested and maybe stressed, it expect the communication, the conversation to be influenced. When you have a client who communicates like this with you, it will normally be easy and fluent. And even during stress, it's still going to be simple and clear. When you experience an information processing style where the leading hemisphere, the leading eye, the leading hand, and the leading ear is all on the same side, it means the information through the senses goes to a switched off hemisphere during stress. What I see, hear, or what I do is not effectively going to be processed. In other words, in this case, what this person sees, the person looks but may not see during stress. I hear, but I do not listen during stress. I know I have my thoughts and emotions, but I cannot express it with my hand and put my thoughts on paper or verbally express what I feel. So this means that during stress, if you're going to have conversations with people where you are coaching someone with this information processing style, they've had a very bad day, they are highly stressed, it may be a tricky conversation to have. And the chances for difficulty in the communication for that coachee may be very big. But this may even be your profile as well. So therefore, make sure you become aware of your processing styles so that you can learn to manage. Because the bottom line, when there's balance in the brain regions, you get balance in your sensory regions. So the key is not the problem is not how we process information. Every style has its own strengths. The idea is stress and fatigue and habitual negative emotions hijacks this information processing style. So it's not the style that's the problem. It is about managing stress, intense negative emotions and fatigue. So I'm sure that you are also fatigued. So here's another brain agility exercise. Let's do it. Okay, so if we look at the last part, what I'd like to share with you is we spoke a lot about how mindsets can influence the coaching conversation, but then also how important neurodesign is in this coaching conversation. So we are of the firm believers in NeuroLink. I am a firm believer that you cannot improve what you cannot measure. So I developed an assessment to measure neurodesign so that we can figure out who are the people that we are training and that we are working with. So I just want to share with you, we recently worked with a financial institution and we worked from the top downwards in the organization, filtering this through the first the executive leaders, but then to leadership and also management. And we did assessments and then we had coaching conversations with them around their design, but then also how to develop agile, high-performing teams. So out of a group of about 250 people that we did assessments and coached them around this, this is what the statistics showed us, that about 48% of the people in the group were verbal communicators and 52% were nonverbal. Now, the point is you cannot manage what you do not understand. It is crucial that leaders and team leaders and executives need to know what is the culture of the organization. Look, for me as a team leader, what is the neuro design of the collective organism of the team that I'm responsible for? What does that look like? Because this will influence how people think, how they learn, how they process information and their communication. And this will also give me an indication to what extent do I have flexibility. So this was fairly balanced. Then when we looked at people utilizing the front or the back parts of the brain, in this organization, it's a financial organization. We have chartered accountants and actuaries working there. So the culture is very strong, more receptive. People who are more to the back brain regions oriented, they think, they process, and they will respond later, but still not too big an imbalance. But there was a difference there. But if we looked at the figurative languages that the different people in general spoke, this is an organization who is very results oriented. And at the end of the day, they are chasing a result. And if you look at the, there's still fairly good balance in the organization. But when we look at analysts being very logical and then being very task oriented, so the culture is definitely in this organization, especially when we look at this as the top teams, and one can understand it. They have a job to do, they have goals to accomplish, but now you know what the organization looks like and then where the imbalances are. And what we found very interesting was that 23% for the analytical part for a very financially oriented organization, that was an interesting finding. We would think that it would be higher. But then also we found that the creativity and the visionary, keeping in mind that this was the executives and the senior leadership part of the organization that we worked with, the strategic part was also a little bit lower. The creative part, the big picture, the innovative part, and so forth. But also when we look at communications, it's important that one has to be more creative, more perhaps analytical also. So this information gave us information to put in the hands of the executives to understand what is the organism that they manage. Who am I managing? Who am I? But who am I managing? And what balances should I bring into the organization, into certain teams, and so forth? Now, for instance, if you worked with the actuaries, the picture looked very different. It was the analytics was extremely high, and then things like the counselor and the strategist part was much lower, and so forth. But now you know. So if you want to bring in balance and flexibility in your teams or your organizations, you understand what to do. But you also understand how to communicate. So again, understanding who am I working with gives me information that helps me to manage the people, the conversations, the communication, and so forth. In this organization, 60%, almost two-thirds, very rational approach. So the feelers, we did other surveys that showed that the people part was definitely an area for further development. So if you look at the different preferences between the front and the back brain, it's fairly balanced, but it's still receptive, not a lot of talking. And if we talk, it's mostly more about facts. Here's the interesting part. Out of the 16 different information processing styles, the biggest one is the one in the year at 11 o'clock. It's the style of left hemisphere, right eye, right ear, and right-handed, 23%. In other words, that's, let's say, a quarter, roughly, of the organization, which implies that 75% of the people here that we worked with may still experience communication hindrances in some way or the other when they communicate during a meeting or even in their written communication or even their nonverbal communication. And on this level, much more. What it also showed us is there's a lot of imbalance and more flexibility needed in the organization to ensure less impact of neurological hindrances. So the point is, ladies and gents, is you got to ask yourself, we spoke about neurodesign. I just showed you some analytics about an organization in how we use this to understand individuals, but even teams and an organization. Now we got to get to that place where you really have to make what we spoke about applicable to you. So who am I? Am I a verbal or nonverbal communicator? Am I the expressive or the receptive person, or am I expressive and receptive? What is the figurative language sequence that I prefer to speak? Do I tend to be more of a feeler or more of a thinker? How does that influence the conversations that I have with people? How are my clients and the coaches experiencing me? And then how does my information processing style influence how I communicate? And how does my overall neurodesign, in general, if you take all these things into consideration, how do you think it will influence your conversations? But then we got it in terms of preparing before we interact with our clients, our coaches. We got to ask the same questions for us to ourselves about who am I coaching? Who am I serving? Who am I interacting with? And what is it that I should do to adapt and adjust to meet that person on their level with regards to these neurodesign issues? So this all requires of us as people developers to be flexible. It's not about being the one or the other. We have a whole brain. We can use and develop the whole brain, but sometimes because of stress, or sometimes some people may be a bit lazy to learn, they prefer to function more in a natural default mode. But so important that flexibility is the key. It's about being analytical and creative, expressive and receptive, thinker and feeler, the one and the other. And if we have that flexibility, whoever our clients are, we'll be able to connect with them and meet them on their level. So also think about this. In which areas is it that I think I still need to improve? And then how flexible are the people or the organizations that I work with, or my organization? How flexible is that organization? And after today's presentation, I really want to suggest that you just take a note, and before every, when you finish the presentation, make a few notes of what you feel you got from this session that you would like to apply to your coaching practice and to your people development practice. So if we talk about really having a flow in your conversations with other people, it is about your neurodesign, your figurative language, and the mindsets and prejudices that we have that will have a profound impact on how effective those communications are and the impact on people's responses after those conversations. So it's about your and other people. So the key is that flexibility is what really is gonna give you those conversations in flow. But then also, I wanna suggest that again, we need to think about creating the right environment to have a psychologically safe coaching conversation. The brain works best under conditions where people feel positive, safe, and relaxed. So the environment has to be psychologically safe. The moment that people feel threatened by their boss, or it's all these corporate games and all sorts of other things, I don't feel safe. And then the psychological environment is not a safe space. So physically and emotionally, it has to be a relaxed environment, positive, safe, and relaxed. But then also very important is we got to make sure that the time that we choose to have our communications, the time and the opportunity is good for both people, so that the communication can work. And then the willingness of everyone to engage and be committed to that communication, obviously, and then consider the outcomes that you'd like to achieve after having done this coaching conversation with people. This should all influence your coaching conversation. And then we live in a world where it's not an option anymore. Inclusivity is going to be essential. Equality is going to be essential, regardless of status and skills levels and statures and designations and whatever else. When we connect with people, we need to connect with them on a level where it's inclusive, where they feel that it's equal, and where the approach is a win-win approach. Ladies and gents, in summary, I just want to say this. And I truly believe that, one, if we truly want to become artists, coaches, and people developers, we need to accurately understand our styles and understand how our styles, how our preferences impact what others see, hear, and feel when they interact with us. And that means, after today's session, I want you to really take some time to think about yourself. And even when we know ourselves, we have to dig deeper. We don't get to a point where we can't discover more about who we are. There's so much more to learn. Keep on learning. But then, obviously, we want to be artists. We need to understand the material that we are working with. And meaning with that, understand the styles and the preferences of the people that I interact with, that I coach, that I teach, and that I communicate with, and tune into make sure you are clear on what you expect to see, hear, and feel when you interact with them as such. So that will not sort of sometimes pull the carpet under your feet and sometimes be surprised by people's responses or how they react. So bottom line, do unto others what they want to be done unto. So ladies and gents, thank you very much for attending my session today. And may it be that you take something from this presentation, apply it to yourself, your practice, and others. Much appreciated for your time today and all of the blessings and good luck that you need to run a successful practice. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Andre. It was very, very informative, and we appreciate your information. I know some of you, there are lots and lots and lots of questions, and I want to make sure that you know that Andre is going to stay for another 10 minutes after the end. I'm going to give you some information, then we'll go to the questions. And then the implementation mastery sessions are going to take place in 30 minutes, which I'll tell you about in a minute. But first, I just want to thank you, Andre, for such an informative session and such great information that you shared. Everyone was kind of listening and sending in questions and lots of accolades for, you know, I'm going to ask you some the most popular questions in a few minutes. But I want all of you to know that WBEX is continuing. It's a coach-created organization. And we continue to provide you the services that you love. And we'll be sharing a survey, actually, which they'll put it up there for you now. We want you to take a few minutes to put your input on this full summit session and what you'd like to see us put together for the future with WBEX. The survey will automatically pop up when you leave the Zoom webinar, actually. Now, we'll take questions in just a few minutes. And at the end of the session, this is the end of the session, but before we go, I just want to go through a couple of things to keep the conversation going. So we have a exclusive community where that was launched last year, where you can continue with us to connect with other coaches around the globe, to engage in the full summit sessions, to share our knowledge, and to learn about what's going on in the world of coaching. And we have a dedicated post there to discuss Andre's session, and we're dropping that link in right now. Now, Andre will be dropping in the community over the next 24 to 48 hours to answer your questions. And he'll also be in the implementation mastery session shortly. Lynn will drop the link to the specific post where you can ask questions and he'll be answering them for a while. Please feel free to ask. Many of them that you ask, especially the specific questions, I would suggest you put those. I won't be able to share those with them because there were a number of them that were general, but you had a lot of specific questions. Put those in the community and he can answer those, or go to the session in 30 minutes. So that's the IM session. There's also an IM session next week, Tuesday. But Andre will only be at the one today in 30 minutes. And we have other sessions in multiple language. We have English, Portuguese, Russian, and Spanish related to this session. You can sign up for the IM sessions by clicking the link in the chat box. It's in there now. And please remember to give your feedback. You'll get the survey when you end the, when you leave the session. So Andre, the first question I want to ask you is to give a little more information on the brain agility exercises. What are they used for? Why did you put them when you did? How are they used? And what can you tell us more about that and how we might be able to use them with our clients?
Yeah, thank you. Norma, the world is talking about agile, and agile means fast, easy, and flexible. Now, the point is we have two brain hemispheres, and the left side of the brain controls the right side of the body, and right hemisphere controls the left side of the body. But just because we have two hemispheres does not mean that we have learned to utilize them at an optimum level simultaneously. We are born with two legs, but it takes us time to learn to walk before we can run. Now, that principle is applicable to how the brain also works. We have a very powerful brain. Your brain is like a muscle. It has to be optimized. It has to be exercised. So therefore, fitness means we need to process information fast and easy, but flexibility is needed to utilize all the various regions of the brain simultaneously. So when we do a simple brain agility movement activity like this, and that was illustrated, it forces you to use various parts of the brain simultaneously. And this, for instance, is the reason that we have seen also the biggest lacking element in terms of mental flexibility and cognitive agility. So when we do an activity, sometimes our concentration decreases. Your brain goes through peaks and valleys, which is normal. But the moment that something challenges the brain, again, two things happen when you challenge. One, you produce some of those good chemicals that I spoke about. But two, you start activating some of the regions that became inhibited there, where, you know, where your focus and concentration went down. It's activated. It's like switching on the brain. So in a nutshell, the short answer is the brain agility exercises helps to keep the brain switched on during a long session. This was a 90-minute session, and it's not easy to stay focused for 90 minutes for most people. So we got to try and keep it engaging for them. And a simple activity like this is why we do it.
Great, thank you. Another very popular question had to do with all of the assessments out there in the world. And how does yours connect with so many of them? Have you done any connection with them to see how they relate, particularly those that give you four quadrants in their programs?
In the first place, we believe you cannot improve what you cannot measure. Now, we specialize in a specific field called neuroagility. So based on this field, we designed an assessment because, for instance, brain agility is a driver that improves brain performance. But now, if you talk about it, people think, oh no, I'm brain fit because of inflated ego or someone gave me a few nice compliments, but it doesn't mean that I can do these simple activities. So you've got to be able to find ways of measuring it. So in our assessment, things like brain agility, the information processing styles, you will not get it in another assessment, not at this stage, because it's neuroscience stuff that we brought up, where other assessments are mainly psychometrical stuff. But there are things that may appear to people to be similar, like the different quadrants, and many of the quadrant things really are good stuff to use. For instance, you know, I know a lot of coaches use things like a DISC, Jung's four personality traits and so forth. And I think, you know, although some of those things are more personality profiles, it does indicate to some of the four quadrants. So it may address that one aspect of your neuro design. So I am a firm believer, if we as coaches and people developers want to help our coaches and clients improve performance, you cannot improve what you cannot measure. So it's great if they use tools. Like, we got to have tools in our toolbox if we really want to be artists. You got to make sure the more we move towards artistry as people, developers, and coaches, the more we got to make sure I have the accurate tools that is going to truly help me drive effective coaching and conversations. But I'm very familiar with many of them, and I'm a great supporter of doing an assessment. An assessment, as long as, for me, the problem that I have with assessments is we should not be putting people in boxes. The purpose of the assessment that we have is to get them out of the box, to show them how to develop themselves. So we can show you, this is your default mode. This is where you are at the moment. But here are the things you can do to improve that flexibility and become an even bigger version of yourself. So when people use assessments to develop, I'm very happy. I love it. But we shouldn't use assessments to stereotype and put people in boxes, because every human being is so much more than just a few pieces of paper. And we want to build people up. Putting them in boxes or stereotyping them is, in my opinion, breaking them down. It's limiting them. It's not empowering. So as long as the assessments you use are empowering, fantastic. Go for it.
So that was assessments. Now let's go to research a little bit, because many of them were asking and talking about the right left brain hemisphere. Conversations of the past have been debunked or challenged or whatever. So how does your work line up with that, those current conversations?
Yeah. So I know that that is often a very contentious issue, but we have to understand the work that Sperry did and got a Nobel Prize for is still accurate. Certain parts of the brain control certain parts of the body. That's still 100% correct. How that information has been interpreted.
I hope he's not frozen for good. So. Well, if he doesn't come back, then I just suggest you try the implementation mastery sessions coming on in 24 minutes now. And perhaps you can finish then. But it looks like he might be frozen for a minute. The next question I was going to ask him came from Linda. I guess he's gone. Oh, he's gone. And that has to do with what's the impact of 2 to 3 years of pandemic, isolation, and stress on corporate behavior and collective neuroplastic response. I worry about what the impact on empathy, collaboration, and creativity, but I don't have any science to back up my gut feelings. And a number of you were just really appreciative of having the neuroscience perspective of things that you do and have learned in your coaching practice and having the neuroscience validation behind what you've been doing normally. So I don't know, but we should probably go ahead and close it out because we're only 3 minutes left. And I would just suggest that you go to the implementation mastery session. And he will be there in 23 minutes and hopefully he won't be freezing at that time. Thank you so much for being with us today. And the next session with W. Bex is on Thursday, that's today, at 1700 EDT. So what's that? I'm in Pacific Coast and I don't use that, but change has changed, fostering resilience in fluid times. So that's coming on today. I think it would be, 5 o'clock Eastern time, 2 o'clock Pacific time. So that's with Leanne Davey. And I suggest that you want to attend that and continue WBEX. Thank you so much for coming today. And we'll see you next time. Have a great day and Happy New Year. Bye.